often we turn the mics off, but keep talking. You never know what people are gonna say. The topics range and change. Listen up.
To bury or not to bury Spike Lee is the question.
We're going through Spike Lee's greatest hits.
Should we bury Spike Lee?
No.
Starting with She's Gotta Have It, his biggest understood kind of first
film. His first film.
So I kind of liked it.
Before that. Right. Yeah.
But okay, so She's Gotta Have It. Everybody's pretty much saying it's
but
right.
I
never finished it.
I kind of liked
it. It has cultural status. Okay. It has cultural status, though, especially...
It was the first time that it was put out there that there could be black women who are comfortable with their sexuality and getting in, you know, without feeling like. So, you know, Nora was the player in that movie, and Sisters was happy to see her get hers.
Listen, this is what I'm trying to tell you. My homegirl's going to say the same thing.
Because she was a writer. Zora Neale Hurston. Right. Come on.
My homegirl's going to probably say the same thing. The separation of. The idea and the execution.
Think about the time when it was made, though.
Fine. Okay.
No, it did. And if I may, there's a film that came out to me I didn't like. And it came out at least 10 years after Do the Right Thing. And I said, if this movie came out around Do the Right Thing, this wouldn't be shit. And that movie's called Crash. And people are always like, hey, Crash was best picture that year.
You didn't like Crash?
Compare Crash to Do the Right Thing.
Oh yeah,
my argument's done. The fact that he made a picture about race to me that is still superior to a picture about race 12 years later is testament to what he was saying.
Okay.
The other thing that I thought was awesome was he hit on a theme that will forever you'll see in black. I'm gonna keep it real. Do the Right Thing to me is an archetype of black films in that even if you look at Friday, right? Friday, they never leave the block.
Right.
He made social mobility as a tool for oppression, a theme in cinematic film when he made Do the Right Thing.
I feel that.
And the fact that your pain is confined. You're walking up the block, up and down the block, carrying all the characters' pain. He knows this person. And when you see their moments when he's connecting with people, he's connecting not with their joys or he's connecting with their pain. Mm-hmm. And he's delivering that. And I want to bring you back to what you said. Your question was, the flaw in the movie was Mookie throwing the trash can into the window, right? Mm-hmm. And that comes from carrying everybody's pain. The other thing is, when you look at the guy who played Huey P. Newton.
Roger Guinevere.
Right. Mm-hmm. He plays someone who has Down syndrome walking up and down the block with a picture of Martin and Malcolm. What do you do? What do you do with the dysfunctionality of the two philosophies coming together? And then he ends the film with two quotes from King and Malcolm X. Right. And what's so bomb about it is he's arguing for the film he makes years later. He starts off with King saying, an eye for an eye will leave us all blind. But Malcolm X had a great fucking point. His point was this. What do you do to people who don't listen to peace, who don't listen to logic, who don't listen to spirituality? What do you do? You throw the fucking trash can through the fucking window. So artistically, as a filmmaker, that is a complete film artistically. When you look at the plot, when you look at the aesthetics, when you look at what's going on politically, it's bomb. Okay.
And Mo Better Blues to me is a good.
Wait, what was the next?
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay.
What I will say is, Do the Right Thing feels like a book set to visuals. You know what I'm saying? Like I felt like I could have read a book and seen that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So to that extent, I think it's good. There's some parts that we could argue about, but I have to look back. I've only really recently resaw it. So we got She's Gotta Have It, pretty much thumbs down. We got School Days, thumbs up. Okay, I heard the argument for that. I can dig it. Do the Right Thing, we got a thumbs up. So we got two back to back hits right there. Mo Better Blues.
Absolutely, oh, okay. Thumbs up.
I've seen you make arguments. I've seen you now, on the internet make arguments that Spike Lee makes in Mo Better Blues.
Now, Mo Better Blues.
Come on, Bleak.
I think I have to see it again, and I feel like there was an end. Again, it's something about these endings that make me feel like, dude, you just, you just, you you just put a dent in the
He subject. Hooked his sister up. What you want from him? He was like, hey, Joey, I'm going to hook you up with Denzel. All
right, well, we going to... All right, that's so what that was about,
right? Right, so Joie Lee.
She's got
Cindy Williams.
She's got to have it down. We got School Days, Do the Right Thing, Mulberry Blues. Jungle Fever.
No, absolutely, Jungle
Go
Fever.
Go back with My Better Blues.
My Better Blues, thumbs up.
I was going to break that one down. That's my joint. My Better Blues.
Okay.
The love stories in there.
It's the most amazing black love story happening in My Better Blues. And it's a real... It's a realistic black love story. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We're so often busy seeing the situations where, you know, everybody's successful... Everybody rich. You know, it's what was the Vivica Fox Morris Chestnut movie? Like, the black love stories look like that.
You can play that game.
Yeah, I'm 28 and I'm president of a company and I'm in love with another 28-year-old who's also president of a company and we all making six figures and balling and we just got so much money and luxury, we can't get together. Right. You got a musician, a popular musician, a working musician, and a humble little teacher. And a jazzy little sexy singer, you know, and you see the two women juxtaposed against one another and the differences in what they add to his life and where they both irritate him. The thing is, you get his relationship with Clark is so extremely sexual because she is so sensual and sexy and she fits into that whole lifestyle. She can understand him as an artist, but she's frustrated with his management, you know, and wants to have more say so. And she wants to be a part of his art. But he has a major, Bleak Gilliam has a major control ego issue when it comes to his art. He's an artist, like all musicians. It's Erykah Badu. I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my shit type thing. As where Indigo is removed from that part of his life. So she provides him with a sort of solace that he can't get when he's with his regular crew. You know, with her being away from it, and she just gives him something different, a certain peace. She's not all into the music and into the hype and into the club and that sort of thing. So you got that aspect of it. You got him versus the Turo brothers as being the club managers trying to dick him on his money, even though he's the draw for anybody coming to his club, coming to that club. So that was Spike's commentary on how musicians and pimped or play. You know what I'm saying? Like, he needs a stage. He needs to be in their spot to be able to perform. But they need him even more so. You know? And he recognizes his value. Right. Then you have the black man pitted against the black man with him and Wesley Snipes in that situation. You know, and the woman in between them, because Bleak, he's
going for the white.
Yeah, he has a passion for Clark. But she's definitely not boo. He's happy to have her there, but in some ways he takes her for granted. As where Shadow is lusting after her, so he's willing to do whatever he can get to better. And it's going to give him the trump that he feels he needs to be better than Bleak. He already feels like he can be a better leader than Bleak. All that sort of stuff. You see my boo Giancarlo Esposito and his little French.
Right.
And that relationship and how he gets bagged on by his black, you know, by the brothers, by that. And then, but to me, the other part of the story, and I overlooked it, how the story starts out with Bleak coming up in this household with a mom that's like, yo ass is going to play this trumpet. And his dad being completely fascinated with sports and kind of removed from that relationship. His relationship with his mother and father have everything to do with his relationship with women and the other men in the story. And you see, we don't know whatever happens to the mom. We don't know if the parents split, but you see early on, they're not going to be together. They don't get along. Right. They don't seem to have anything in common. But mom is completely removed. But everything that she instilled in him has turned him into the person who he is, this musician. But he still has this relationship with his father, who's still a baseball fanatic. So it's so many things happening in that movie.
And you can't even forget the fact that the women, it was the natural Joie Lee against Clark, Cindy Williams, the high, good hair, you know, it attacked that issue because the women are so much played against each other to think that a man is going to choose either he's going to go natural or he's either going to go with the, you know, Cindy
and
Williams.
And the scene with them in the same dress?
Yeah, when he sent them the same red dress, right? Oh, it's about to be popping up in this one.
You created a classic scene.
Yeah.
Yes. But he hit that issue, you know, so it was eye-waking. He was hitting, Mo Better Blues, absolutely.
He made Denzel Washington in that film.
Yes. Not to mention the soundtrack is fucking classic.
It's one of the
the first black films where he did that whole boomerang, Mo Money, the early 90s, yeah, where they made sound, with the soundtrack, made the movie. He started that with Mo Money Blues, where he brought jazz into hip hop.
He did that.
It was also a story about an artist who wanted to have integrity, but someone else wanted him to sell out, and he wouldn't sell out, so he would stay doing what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Now, say with the ending. Well, I'm biased because I played the trumpet. So when he got hit, I felt it. And when he went back to try, which I was kind of shocked. I was like, it almost was like.
That was painful to watch.
He hadn't played ever.
That was painful to watch.
Because I was like, I was like, why the fuck didn't you?
His little gambling homeboy.
Go in your house, see how long you can play. And if you can't do it, then don't go on stage and be like, you know, I can't embarrass myself. Mm-hmm. But the fact he set it up for him to basically like all I am is my music, and now I don't have that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Bring it back to Spike. It's raining outside. the place he chose, the view. He didn't just go. You're in the club. That scene is different than every other scene. Mm-hmm.
Consensus: the movie was butter. Consensus: the movie was butter.
You gotta see that one again.
It's Mo Better Blues, Purple Rain, and Love Jones. Like,
that would be a trilogy right there.
That's it.
Okay. I guess
the ending of Mo Better Blues being like, wasn't he was with homegirl and they have kids?
He was dreaming that. He was dreaming. He was in his cell.
Like he breaks down and tries to get. And once he gets her, then he basically just fast forward to the end.
And you see him with Clark, not Clark, you see him with Indigo, and now they have their child. Yeah. And he's teaching his child how to play the trumpet, and he's going through the same thing. Because what that opening scene shows that his mother was such a drill sergeant on his practice that she didn't let him be a child and play with his friends when he wanted to. He had to get on that instrument. And what he's doing with his own child is making sure that he's getting the practice, but he's going to go ahead and let him be a baby and have fun with
him live. His mama didn't let him. His mama basically was like, so that's why he has, he's awkward with everybody.
Else to attach to.
Okay. Right. It's good.
Another book turned into a film. Like, I felt like I could read that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could have been a novel and it was done straight up as a movie.
True.
All right, okay. So we got another hit. We got like three hits in a row.
I'm keeping
track. Jungle Fever.
Absolutely, thumbs up.
Samuel Jackson should have.
Gator.
That's the only.
I don't remember that movie.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
I don't remember
Lynette McKee and Wesley Snipes and Annabella. What's her name? Annabella. Ozzie Davis, Ruby D.
Annabella Sciorra.
Mm-hmm. Her and Wesley Snipes worked together. He started messing around with her, the white woman, the Italian chick. And Lynette McKee was like, oh, hell no.
What happens after the crack house scene? I don't remember anything after.
I don't remember that movie at all.
The movie was. What?
What happened?
Well, bring it back to the discussion. What were you going to say? Go ahead.
One, it's the first time we saw, not the first time, but one of the first times, like, pop culture got to see the real beef that blacks have with interracial dating. You know, and it was outspoken. He didn't sugarcoat it. He looked at blacks and Italians, which is probably a little more relevant, like, on the East Coast. Right. You know, we don't see it all day here in L.A. Mm-hmm. But we could still relate to it, you know. And then you have Gator, the drug-addicted son who's been enabled by his mother. You know, so that was another story when you just look at black family, like, there's somebody that's enabling this addiction. Because Halle Berry was a crackhead in this movie, right? Yeah. And he focused a lot on the whole crackhead era in that time. Right. Number two. You can't even argue. Even the conversation when the black women were sitting down together, Lynette McKee, Veronica Webb, all of her homegirls, when they found out that he was cheating. And the most powerful line was like, and with a white bitch. That's how black women felt. That's how some black women even still feel to this day. But it was so powerful and so, like, in your face. He exposed, you know, what Italians were talking about. Blacks, like, you moolies and you niggas. Because the Italian girl, Annabella Sciorra, she got beef from her family, too. They were like, we know you're not fucking with this, you know? And then the whole idea about just, like, the opening scene with Lynette McKee and Wesley Snipes making love. The opening scene was him and his wife getting busy and the little girl's in the bedroom. And she hears them, mommy and daddy. And then they walk her to school, like, putting that black family thing out there. And even in the middle with all that chaos between the interracial dating and all of that, at the end, the husband and wife's marriage lasts. They bring their shit back together again. So it was kind of like, one, this shit does happen, the black and white thing, then affairs. They do happen, and at the end of the day, you know, mistresses, don't get your hopes up because it might not happen. You know, and no disrespect. I'm just saying but he really hit.
Right.
Yeah, you know, he really hit those points. So I think absolutely. Everybody was like, I got jungle feet. The term.
Now that was a classic sound.
The term itself. People still say, oh shit, he got jungle fever. Right. When you with a black, you know, when you see an interracial couple, you know, everybody's like, oh, they got jungle fever.
The other achievement to jungle fever to me is, and this is something. Now this people, okay. To me, the best critique you can make about Spike Lee's films is that he doesn't write female characters well. Like, to me, they always end up weak. Like, even in Bamboozle, like, did Jada have to have fucked Damon Wayans? I'm sorry, can we say that?
Yeah.
Okay. did she have to have fucked Damon Wayans? Like, did and He Got Game, did she have to have fucked Denzel? Like, he always puts women in this position where they're in a weaker position.
And he shows everybody's titties. He is obsessed with titties. We just seen everybody's titties.
He's a short nigga who didn't get no pussy. I'm gonna keep it real.
Right.
But exactly. But Jungle Fever to me, the other point is that was the one film where I feel like he put his effort into representing black women and giving black women a voice, because there aren't a lot of black female directors, going back to the point about diversity in entertainment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was a big move for him as a little guy with a little short complex who didn't get pussy when he was in high school. But you know what I'm saying? Like, he took Jungle Fever as time out to say, hey, I like women in there. Like, even, I'm sorry, I'm going to let this out, but even in School Days, the Tisha Campbell character, I'm just
like, when she was licking the scalp?
Yeah, licking. I'm just like, he writes really weak-ass black female characters in general, but Jungle Fever was his exception, where it was like,
I love you, Julian.
They were real.
Oh, my God. Everything about her was bad. Like,
so yeah. We got four coming up on five hits in a row.
Okay.
Jungle Fever, and then going into Malcolm X. Nothing to talk about.
Hit.
No.
Okay, we're rolling. We're rolling.
The I Am Malcolm X part really could have been cut out, but
what?
I
feel you on that.
No.
Me too.
I feel you.
I was like,
temporary.
I was like, what is this? Yeah, this should be on the DVD or something. Like, what is this? And I was like 92. I'm in sixth grade, and when it came to that, I was like, what? I'm seriously in sixth grade watching this. My mom
got up.
You're
about to stand up, huh?
Yeah, no, my mom, she left because she didn't want to even see the assassination part. She couldn't take it.
Are those the
details? And so she left. Mm-mm. And so then when it came to that part, I was kind of like, all right.
Gel and a stamp.
Like, I guess the movie's over. Like, what is this?
Well, I've been out of jail, but I'm going to have to do a design.
But no, she's nothing to talk. Every time it comes on, whatever part I'm at, I'm watching it. Now,
what's the next one?
I love that.
I have no argument for you.
I like Crooklyn.
You make that argument.
I saw it recently. I thought it was just forgettable.
I think what I like mainly, because it is a complicated story. What I like about Crooklyn is the little girl. It's another situation where we are seeing the world through.
His casting is premium.
Yeah, we see the eyes through this little black girl, and I think it's a situation. If I look at it just generally, you have this black family that's extremely dysfunctional. You know, you have a father who has a dream of being a musician, but he's not successful. He has a large family to support. He wants his wife to believe in his dream. It seems maybe at some point she did, but now she doesn't. They're living hardcore Brooklyn concrete jungle life with all these kids and all the characters. Uh-huh. And it's one of those situations, you know, Spike, this is supposed to be part of a trilogy he's doing on Brooklyn life.
Okay.
And so, you know, they got a crazy little white neighbor that lives downstairs that has stinky trash, and they're, you know, dealing with just, you know, life issues. And to me, the strongest part of the story is when the little girl is sent to visit relatives either down south or in Jersey. There's somewhere. And she has this experience, kind of a growing up experience. And I think the reason why I like that, because I identified with it. I spent a summer with family in Stockton, and it was a pivotal summer of my life. And I was probably about 9 years old. But being so far away from my family and being in this kind of country environment with older people.
Can't do nothing.
Right. It makes you have an appreciation for what you do have. You know, your life may not be rich in everything, but you know, their family had a lot of love with all the siblings and everything. To me, it got a bit melodramatic with Alfred Woodard's character coming down with like cancer and getting real sick, and It was one of those movies that towards the end, there was going to be no redemption for anybody. It was just going to end sad. And I guess for him, it was supposed to be like, I guess, a street tale of survival. And that's where it kind of just got to be like, It might not make the hit list. It was okay.
I'm going to take it off the hit list, and here's why. Here's what I think was going on. If we look at the timeline, right, he makes Jungle Fever, he makes Malcolm X, and the next movie is Crooklyn. Mm-hmm. And then the next movie is Clockers. And here's what I think was happening. Boys in the Hood came out in 1991. and Menace to Society and that whole genre.
What about Set It Off?
Mm-hmm. That whole genre of hood violence that was my and us telling our 1996, thing. And to be honest, I feel like Spike Lee feel like he missed on that because Spike Lee wants to be Scorsese. I mean, when we're talking about She's Gotta Have It or we're talking about the other, that's his mean streets. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He wants to be the prototypical New York director.
Because all the Scorsese movies you mentioned are West Coast movies.
Right. Exactly.
And he wanted that East Coast.
You're hitting on my point. He was like, hey, I'm the black director. I'm from New York. I should have told this story first. But he was focused on a better idea. He was making Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And when the hype came down, I honestly think he looked at it and he said, I need my hood movie. And I think, and if you look at Crooklyn and Clockers, which are his next two projects, they're a mix of Boys in the Hood. Mm-hmm. And out of all those hood films, Boys in the Hood is the one that was nominated for an Oscar.
I think we gotta redo a hit list for black movies podcasting.
It was perfect because Malcolm X, it was right at the end of when hip hop was. It was all Malcolm X gear or pro black.
Exactly.
And then. Gangster rap kicked in, exactly.
And that was the end of it.
He's trying to get in on that.
All right,
but he didn't do it. I'm with you, Clockers. Put it on the shit list. I'm with you. So we got
Clockers are on the.
All right, I threw him in there. What do y'all feel about Clockers?
I don't remember Clockers.
Nobody's seen.
But people don't talk about it like that.
Right. Oh, with Mekhi Phifer.
Right, I remember.
So he did a documentary in between, and then we have Girl 6.
I like Girl 6.
I didn't like Girl 6.
And that's who saw the film.
Wait, I saw it.
I saw it too.
What's her name?
I like the soundtrack.
No, that's not Lila Rashawn.
No. They look alike, though. Teresa Randall.
Teresa Randall.
Oh, my God, she looks so good.
Boomerang. Was she in Boomerang? Who was she in Boomerang? Lila Rashawn, yes.
Here, hold on. I'm going to pull her up Nah, man.
Lila Rashawn is Sunshine. So it is another Eddie Murphy film.
Yes. Throw it up in the air and turn to sunshine. Right, yeah, Teresa Randall.
Man, she was fine, and I was like, man, if she wasn't in this movie, I wouldn't dare get through the next five minutes.
But it was
like,
what are you doing, Spike? What is this?
Spike.
Players Club was better.
Oh no! What? She said Players Club was better.
Here's the thing. Spike he wants to do kind of like this jazz storytelling. It seems kind of jazz.
I know. I put him in front of me like I put him in there.
Kind of artsy. All I do is reach out. And have it center around stories and ideas and themes. But it's like, dude, you gotta tie a bow in this somewhere. You gotta tie this in somewhere. Girl 6 was just disjointed. It didn't make sense. What about She Hate Me?
I was like, well, the only thing good about
Girl 6.
Okay.
She Hate Me.
And of course, the soundtrack was off.
Get on the Bus.
I liked it.
I like Get on the Bus.
That was good.
That was good.
All right, so we'll put that on.
Keep it on the list.
I think it did well that year for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't get the marketing push for that. Right.
But everybody knew about that.
Hold on, Spike. You're not in the ground yet.
We got a couple other documentaries.
He Got Game is still relevant.
It's still.
You know who Jesus Shuttlesworth is. You saw Rick Fox do his thing. It was hot. Denzel White, come on, man.
1998. I don't remember it. I don't remember it, to be honest.
Let me say this. Can I say something? What other film had the message that He Got Game had? And given the relevancy of the message of He Got Game.
Well, what do you consider?
Ray Allen was in it. Rosario
Dawson. To me, the message was about what happens to black athletes in America. And specifically, oh, if you look at LeBron, if you look at LeBron James, LeBron Quigley. James yeah, is from Quigley, Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Lynette McKee. I mean, now that's one thing. He keeps he recycles his cast.
He does. Spike uses the same people in every movie. What I'm saying,
like, to me, he like any art. To me, that's the whole point. Like if you look at
he
art,
got game was. It, I put it more on the hit than miss side. It was actually I enjoyed it. It was good.
I wasn't going to watch it again.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Right, but it's not even something to want to watch again. To me. Like, I don't know.
It was
just,
four times. It was fun.
Put it in the middle. It'll be in the middle. Well, all right. So, Summer of Sam. I never saw that either.
Me either.
I did see it. It was
I've seen everything by Spike Lee.
Okay. Summer of Sam.
Was fresh.
So, you did, and then he did Bamboozle.
I liked Bamboozle.
I think Bamboozle.
That's with Damon Wayans, right?
Mm-hmm. Bamboozle was great.
Michael Rappaport.
That's what I think but I think that's at the point where Hollywood was like, all right.
We're done. Because he was also running his mouth, too. He wasn't just making movies. He was running his mouth, you know?
After that, nothing else is good. Now, what is this, 25th Hour?
Yeah, that was horrible.
Really?
With Ed Norton?
Yeah, it was horrible.
To me, it was his whole thing was, I'm going to tell a story, and 9/11 just happened.
Okay.
Well.
Like, that was his. No, that's Spike. No, I swear, that's Spike Lee. Spike Lee was like, I want to tell a story about 9/11, so, you know.
Right.
And a dog. Like,
wait, Bamboozle 20. Oh, okay. All right,
so yeah, 25th Hour. All right, great.
That sucks.
She Hate Me.
I liked She Hate Me.
I liked it, but
I liked the idea of it. There's points where Spike just does little things, at least in those old movies, but in this, there was just a large gap in logic.
I agree with Johanse.
There's a large gap in logic.
Because the idea of them coming to a guy and they have a relationship and they're wanting his man milk and they're business women trying to make a proposition.
It's a lot on it.
It is a lot on it. You know what I'm saying?
You need to turn this into like Eternal Sunshine and Spotless Mind. Like, yeah.
What? So Kerry Washington was a lesbian in the movie?
Yeah. And like an active lesbian. It was her and what's the girl's name?
This is where it falls apart.
Danya Ramirez.
Yeah.
You're right. After Bamboozle.
They had a sex scene.
Get out.
She had a sex scene with Danya Ramirez. Bamboozle is Spike Lee. With Anthony Mackie.
What Remember the Time is to Michael Jackson.
Wait.
Go back.
Was Spike Lee was like, Remember the Time with Michael Jackson. Like,
no.
That was like,
no.
After that, can I clarify
my point?
The last big hit.
I mean, as an industry, it's just like, we don't like you anymore. You claim your blackness just a little too much. Like
that's what I say. He started talking.
Like if you see Michael Jackson, like he had Magic Johnson. He had every black royalty person. After that, he was fucking kids. Like right after that.
Okay. She Hate Me. Miracle of Saint Anna. Red Hook Summer.
Everything he's done recently.
And then a lot of stuff that he did.
Is he going to do Old Boy?
Apparently, yeah, he is.
What?
Old Boy is another Alexandre Dumas remake.
Oh, really?
What's Old Boy?
Wait. Apparently, he's also doing Inside Man 2.
Yes.
Same cast?
Which I disagree.
I don't know. Announced.
It would happen.
Oh.
Are you
sorry.
Nobody going to see Samuel Jackson, Josh Brolin? Have you seen Old Boy?
What is Old Boy?
Old Boy is like a Korean film. It's like, no, but it's, I'm going to tell you, this is what Old Boy, I'm sorry, are we still?
Yeah, we were cool.
This is what it is.
Old Boy is this. You see this Korean guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's been drinking. He's having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, he's locked in a hotel room for no reason. He doesn't know why he's locked away.
2003.
And he's locked away for 15 years.
Oh, shit.
And then one day, he's freed. And the rest of the movie is figuring out why he was locked away.
Oh my God.
And Spike Lee's remaking it. But Old Boy is the. When you find out why. I'm sorry. When you find out why he's locked away,
mm-hmm.
your mind is blown.
Tell me. Blow it.
No.
Spoiler alert.
It's called Old Boy. Go see it. It's phenomenal.
See it right here.
He's remaking it. But
120 minute release date in South Korea in 2003. So it's a fairly old movie.
All I'm saying is that the level at which Spike Lee missed. Is like, dude, like, where did this come from? You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Spike, I think Spike Lee has always had something within him to where maybe it's
artistic, slight artistic arrogance, because every artist has it to some extent, where they say, I'm not changing my style, or I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, and that can be commended. But there's also a point where you say, like, look, man, like, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that you want to try to show the world to explore certain topics, explore these stories, and he probably watched a lot of foreign films, because a lot of foreign films, there isn't necessarily always conflict or whatever have you, but there's a point where it's like, and I use Spike Lee as the example to say that I think a lot of black directors and writers have felt, oh, well, I have an idea to talk about interracial dating, or I have an idea to talk about the projects, and I have an idea to talk about, oh, I got a homie that did X, Y, and Z, so I should make a movie off of that, and that can work up to a certain point. You know what I'm saying? That can work to stir emotions, and that can work to probably make it a good thing to feel like you're watching a book put on, you know, on visuals. But there's also a level of the craftsmanship of the craft of making a movie to where you got to know, like, this might not work. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because it just doesn't make sense. So if you just want to make it artistic and stuff like that, and I think that that's what Spike Lee kind of took his liberties with, which he has the right to do, but some other people are like, not on my dime.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Not, I think he probably dime, felt, you know, like he had earned the right to do it, because he has been our, I guess at this point, most celebrated black writer, yes, director.
Right.
But it still seems like Hollywood would insist that he continue to earn his stripes, even though he's made them plenty of money.
But to keep it
and
real,
it's made him bitter.
And I think,
what
it
did
is,
you call him, the Little Richard of Hollywood?
Yeah, I don't think, want him to be the Little Richard of Hollywood, yeah, but he's on that way.
He is.
He's what on is his Little life. Richard? Is he
and
still alive?
I don't think.
Sorry.
Sidebar.
I was taking notes on all that, but especially once he got to School Days, he started a nice run, and then after Malcolm X, he kind of dropped off. And then from there, it was kind of hit or miss. And it's been like that.
Large hit or miss.
But he was on a roll. But after Malcolm X, bamboozled. They were like, oh, no, he did Malcolm X. You ain't doing this.
It depends. Okay.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right. Just hit or miss.
Yeah, because he had bamboozled basically like,
he's that great documentary.
You know, we going to put, yeah.
His documentary. Yeah.
And that's what he really seems to want to do. Like, that's the thing about a documentary, is that you can tell a story of a situation or whatever and put it how you want to put it.
Right.
And there isn't necessarily artistic, right? Like,
you just put
the situation
facts
right on there. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's like, dude, like, okay, you're going to talk about, we're going to talk about interracial dating. Now you have to create a cast of characters. You have to somehow create this drama and make it end in 90 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, right. And so, you know, that's the same thing. Even when I'm looking at John Singleton, I think at a certain point, John Singleton was like, look, I'm done. He's like, I'm starting doing this now.
Right. What has he done recently? Anyway, nothing really.
Yeah,
what was his last
thing he did? Was Abduction.
Fast and Furious? Oh, Abduction.
Abduction.
Taylor Lautner? Yeah.
Who was
in
it?
Which he just directed. He only directed that. Which
And see, now this is something that I can appreciate about both John Singleton and Spike Lee, because you're right, everybody doesn't have the writing skill. At least they've taken on projects that they didn't write to lend their directing skill to it.
Right.
Like I said, because Inside Man is amazing. As where we do have, you know, now I'm not trying to bang on Tyler Perry, but I wish he would do more of that. Take on
Take
other
your hands
stories.
Off.
Yeah.
You're not a good film writer, dude.
Yeah.
Your plays are great. The idea is great.
Right.
But film is not the same thing as a stage play.
No, it's not.
And everybody thinks that, a lot of black people think, well, if I can do this, I can do that.
No,
you
cannot.
You need to study first, bro. Like, you gotta take some cues.
Because you've crossed mediums. It's a completely different situation.
Right.
You know, you're not on the stage.
Yo, Hughes Brothers were like, yeah, after a while,
I fuck
they,
with
they
the
said,
Hughes
say,
brothers.
Because I didn't know, I saw the Book of Eli that was them. But I kind of,
and they
when
did
In
Hell.
It, yeah, In Hell was great.
That's my shit.
When
you watch a Hughes brother, that you can tell that it's them.
From great directors.
Yeah, they're directed. Yeah, their style's great.
Is it the
Hell, yeah, with Johnny
tell
Depp.
Them, tell them,
yeah,
tell
the way they shoot stuff is awesome. I wish they do more.
Did they do the one American Gold?
one?
Yes, yeah, did American which is a huge documentary. Mm-hmm. You know what I think?
I think black filmmakers need to do this. I think what they should do, they should take a note from Christopher Nolan. They should just make a really good film and cast black people. In other words, they shouldn't make a film about the black struggle. Just make it, like, you know what's a great blockbuster black film? The Negotiator. F. Gary Gray, the star of Samuel Jackson. Oh, yeah. But you don't think of it as a black film.
Which movie?
It's a black film. But they just cast him as the lead. The Negotiator.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
It's directed by a black person. It's starring a black person. Yeah. But that's the recipe. Like, you have to write a good story and then just cast black people. Don't write a black story. It's like Christopher Nolan. He's like, I'm not going to make a Batman story. I'm going to write a good-ass story and then plug in the Batman characters.
Yeah.
And that's what black filmmakers need to do. Just make the story.
Yeah, because you're right.
And then guess what? Once you make the story, all that black shit is going to come through. You know why? Because you're black.
Right. Because that's the thing. I thought about that when I was watching Flight. Like, it didn't have to be Denzel. It could have totally been somebody else playing that character.
Exactly. Just want that. I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know, doing historical stuff or all that. But sometimes you want to just, okay, it's black people in a movie, and it's a movie. It's not like, oh, I got to deal with race again today. Like, damn, okay.
Right. I have a perfect example of a film that did that. Love Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I love Love Jones.
Yes.
You could have casted anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
But it takes place in Chicago. They cast the black people. They focused on the story. They focused on the dialogue. They have lines like, love, chemistry, the shit is not. You know, like, they just focused on the dialogue and the story, and then they were like, well, we'll just cast Lorenz Tate along.
Yeah.
Right. That was a great movie.
That needs to be the new approach. And the three movies you listed. I'm sorry, the romantic ones, Purple Rain, Mo Better Blues, and Love Jones. Those are all movies that they could be about race, and they don't have to be.
Right. Race is really not the issue at hand. And I think that's been our issue is wanting to be represented on screen and feeling the need to tell our story. And I think this country has made us believe that our story is something uniquely and distinctly different from the human experience.
Right.
When it's not. Slavery aside, right. You know what I mean? We're human beings. We go through the same stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No.
Got the DVD sitting from Netflix right there.
Yeah. Wait. I feel like I have.
Yeah.
What was it about? I heard a lot about it.
Yeah, we got it sitting in there. We need to watch it. Maybe we'll do that tonight.
Well, that's just my thing, man. I'm just saying.
So we're not burying Spike Lee.
Like, what y'all need to do.
So if Spike is listening, you would say what to Spike if he were listening?
I would say Spike and any other director, writer, anybody who does anything creative, don't think that you don't need to go back to the dojo. Go back to the dojo. And step your game back up, man. You know what I'm saying? Go back, read those books again real quick. Go back and really think about what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Because there's things change not only in the industry, but sometimes you need to reinvent your style. Like, do something.
Yeah. Reinvent your style.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that just because you feel like it's a good idea, like the same homegirl I'm telling you about, she had a great idea, and I was just talking with her about it. And I was like, okay, I feel like you have a good story and good idea, but there's something missing somewhere in between here because of X, Y, and Z. And she's like, you're right. And you know what? I just started the whole thing all over again just by that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was all like, you know, a lot of people don't do that. They say, I have a good idea, so that should make it okay.
Right. I'm going to just run with it. They don't revise. Right.
And so then we wonder why we don't have nobody else.
Or why we're not going to the movies often.
I have to tell you, this podcast in some ways has made me really sad. I just wanted to believe that there was a whole lot of really good young, not even young, black writers out there putting together some stories and just getting blocked.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't doubt that there's probably some black writers out there that are like, yo, I already made that script. I've already written this. I've done that, X, Y, and Z. And either somebody jacked them for it or whatever have you. But mind you, going to film school is expensive.
Yeah, it is. Going to debt.
That stuff can be expensive. You can get a book. You can watch. You can get scripts and figure it out. But at the same time, I mean, you do have Scandal
headed by a black woman. You have
my
homegirl. Yeah,
what was the Grey's Anatomy?
My homegirl said that there's another guy, George Tillman. I guess he always gets props in Sundance. The dude that directed Precious and stuff like that. He gets his props, but he's still not getting a lot of work. The next guy that's doing 12 Years a Slave, he's black, black British dude, and on the real, like, British people, they don't play when it comes to getting anything on the humanities right. Like, writing, music, any of that stuff. Like, black British actors are doing their thing.
And they are.
It's like, because they doing the craft.
Yeah.
So, it's like, you know, we got to ask ourselves, like, what are we really focusing on? Like, even, and this is in music, this is in all this stuff. Like, a lot of, we got to step up.
Music, yeah. Music is a whole different.
To learn that stuff. Like, I don't feel good about the fact that I've never been able to read music, but I was able to play off ear, and I've been playing as a kid. But then I see these other cats, and I'm like,
let's sit down and read it.
Be tinkering around all day. Like, you need to think about what you're doing.
Right, and know how to do it. But yeah, I would just say
don't lose faith. There's you know there's some out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because, because we know it's a lot of filter. You know, like, I can just do this, and that's it. You know, you filter through.
You got to put your work in.
There are some, and every year they kind of, you know, they name. They're not doing big shit. But, you know, you can blame Hollywood for some of it. But a lot of it is just you got to find ways to get your stuff out. Everybody's trying to write. Everybody wants to film. I mean, we know how it is in this city. Everybody's trying to make it, and everybody can.
Everybody want to be somebody.
And everybody want to make it quick. That's it, you know.
They want to be overnight sensations.
Right, an overnight sensation.
I was going to say, too, like, the other thing is, I feel like when people go into, when Americans going to artistry, their whole thing is, well, I want to be an artist so I don't have to work a 9-to-5.
Right.
That's not
right. It's not a passion. Yeah. Right.
And so what ends up happening is,
I'm talking that shit right now.
So what ends up happening is they don't put 9-to-5 into their art.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And right. So if you had an artist who literally woke up and at 9 a.m. worked on their art and didn't stop, except for the regular breaks that a work person would make.
Right.
It's not until 5 p.m., they'd probably be successful.
Right,
right.
Because you'd be on your grind.
But
constantly.
But there's an association with art being an easy way out. And
right.
Art is the hard way out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Art, actually,
you got to work starving artist, right.
9 a.m. to 9 p.m. You got to work 4 hours more
right.
than the guy working a 9-to-5. And that's what most people don't get. And that's what a lot of, it's not black people.
It's
that's the other thing. Sometimes we take on too much.
Right, and say blacks, right.
It's people who go into the endeavor of being an artist. Mm-hmm. They feel like artistry is a way out. No, artistry is a way into some other tougher hustle.
Right.
The people who make it, I'm sorry, it's not the best artists. It's the hardest hustlers.
Yeah. But that's in anything almost. That's in anything. That's in anything.
And it's not a career. And for most people, it's not a career that's super duper long lasting.
Right.
You have some people who are able to span a few decades, but ordinarily,
they don't have those many.
Right. Yeah. You reach the ceiling and somebody is replaced. Somebody is
you are replaceable.
You.
Yeah. The new you.
It's like being an athlete.
Yes.
Right.
And the chances of success are the same.
Yeah. Very slim. Very slim.
Thoughtful.